Good. Thank you, Lucille. Yes, food. Food and drink. I suppose air is a fairly basic need too, but you don't have to work for that, do you? Did you have an answer there? Did you, Jesse? Okay, yes, food and water. You're right. Food and drink. You've got to work for that, don't you? I mean, Jesus even taught us to pray, didn't he? Give us this day, or give us each day, give us every day our daily bread. So that's something we need each day. When you think about all the other things you have, you can actually live without having a car. You can live without clothing if you have to, if you can find a warm and sheltered spot. Yes, Jesse?
You need to live to earn as well.
That's right. You've got to live to earn, and the most basic, to learn, yes. And you learn so that later on you can earn money and you can buy food. So food's really basic, isn't it? And you can live without lots of other things. Believe it or not, you can even live without your cell phone or Facebook. Is that what you were going to say, Michael? Yeah, Facebook, you can live without that. But you can't live without food. That's your most basic need, most basic physical need. Food and water. Thank you. And it's this need that we see that Jesus met in the story we read today. Once again, you'll notice that what Jesus did is a sign. If you flip down there to verse 14, it says, then those men, when they had seen the sign that Jesus did. So what Jesus did here is a sign. This is the fourth of Jesus' signs that John records in this book. There were lots of other signs that Jesus did that are not recorded by John. If you look at verse 2, it says there that, I can't even see which is verse 2, then a great multitude followed him because they saw the signs. So Jesus had been doing all these signs, and John hasn't recorded all those signs for us. He's very choosy as to what he records and what he leaves out, and those that he did record, he recorded for a specific purpose. Come on. What's the specific purpose when John chose some signs? What's the specific purpose for which he chose those signs? He said, Jesus did many other signs which are not written in this book, but these are written, what? That you may believe Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. Yes, that's right. And that believing you may in his name. Thank you. So John's very choosy. He chooses which signs he's going to record. And he says, these are the ones I want to particularly record because these are the ones that if you really think about them and follow them through, you'll end up having life. Okay, we're going to think about the occasion on which Jesus performed this sign. That's down there in verse 4. It says, now the Passover, a feast of the Jews, was near. And we've seen before that the occasion when Jesus performed his signs and his miracles is significant. The occasion is often a clue as to what the sign was all about. The occasion in this instance was the feast of the Passover. And the Passover was this really important time for the Jews. It was the great feast when they remembered how God had delivered them 1,500 years before out of the land of Egypt, out of bondage, and had eventually brought them into the promised land. Especially significant at this time was the offering up of the Passover lamb. And that actually gets referred to later on in John chapter 6, but we're not going to deal with that tonight. Equally significant was the fact that God not only brought them out of bondage in Egypt, but then he took them, about 2 million of them, through the desert for 40 years, and he did so by providing for them the one basic physical necessity of life. He did so by providing for them bread every day, day after day, for every year, for 40 years that they were in the desert. He did so by feeding them bread from heaven. Jesus is about to do the same. Notice also where this sign was performed. If you go back to verse 1, we read that after these things, Jesus went over the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias. So Jesus is back in Galilee. Let's have a look at the map that we've got here. And there we've got a map. You can see that Galilee's right up there in the north. And Jesus spent most of his time there. But if you read through John's Gospel, most of John's Gospel is down here in Jerusalem and Judea. There's hardly anything in John's Gospel which is up in the north. This is one of the few places where Jesus is up in the north. In fact, the last thing that we read about in chapter 5 that Doug was talking about last time, that was down in Judea. And down there in Judea, particularly in Jerusalem, people lived in the city. And like a lot of people in the city, the people in the city didn't think too much about where their food was coming from each day. People in the city don't think too much about where their food comes from. I mean, yes, I know we pray, give us this day our daily bread, but, I mean, be honest, most of you don't think much about it, do you? City people don't. You just go down the shop and pick out whatever you want and bring it home and eat it. And people in Jerusalem didn't think too much about where their food was coming from. And if you look at the controversies that Jesus had with people down in Jerusalem, most of their worries were taken up with theological questions and philosophical questions. But Jesus is now back up north. He's in Galilee, and they are country people. And their first concern is not with philosophical questions. Their first concern, well, let's have a look at the next one, is food. That is the first concern of these people living up in the country. So let's see what happened. Jesus just wanted to get away. We're going to have to go back to the Bible text. We should have two screens. Okay, we're going to go back to the Bible text. And you'll notice there in verse 3, it says, Jesus went up on the mountain and there he sat with his disciples. That means just his 12 disciples. So he's just got 13 people there together, Jesus and his 12 disciples. Now, in another book of the Bible which talks about this same incident, it tells us that Jesus and his 12 disciples were worn out. Jesus said to his 12 disciples, come aside by yourselves to a deserted place and rest a while. For, it says, there were so many coming and going that they did not even have time to eat. So Jesus and his disciples are exhausted, they're worn out, they need a holiday. But verse 5 says, then Jesus lifted up his eyes and seeing a great multitude coming toward him. A multitude is a crowd. I guess you and I would be pretty cheesed off about that. Most of us like our personal space. I don't know, I've just been on holidays. We really enjoyed just having some time together. We don't want it to be that way all the time. But it's good, especially when we've had a really busy time. We like, you know, get away and not be disturbed, don't we? But here it says, Jesus lifted up his eyes and he could see this great multitude coming towards him. They're absolutely worn out. How does Jesus respond? Well, again, another writer that talks about this incident says Jesus welcomed them and he spoke to them about the kingdom of God and healed those who needed healing. But there was a problem. Come sundown and the people are still there. So what do? I mean, you haven't actually invited these people for tea. But they're still there and it's tea time. Have you ever had that problem? And you've only got enough food in the house for two and you've got eight because these six people that are visiting, they're still there at tea time. Listen and learn. I mean, in this case, Jesus and his disciples had enough food to feed 13, but they've got 5,000 men, it says down there in verse 10. 5,000 men. And that means literally men, it means males. There were probably around about as many females or women, and maybe about as many children. There were probably something like 15,000. So here are Jesus and his 12 disciples that day, and come tea time, they've got enough food in the house for 13. And they've got 15,013 because of all these extra guests. Now, times like this are great opportunities for God to test you. And we read in verse 5 that Jesus said to Philip, Philip was one of his disciples, he said, "Where shall we buy bread that these may eat?" But this, he said, to test him. So this is a test. It's sort of multiple choice. There are actually four possible answers to this question, where shall we buy bread that these may eat? You can tick A, B, C or D. Let's look at A. The first answer that was given by the disciples together is actually recorded again by another writer who also wrote about this incident. And that writer says the disciples came to Jesus and they said to Jesus, "We're in the middle of nowhere. It's really late. Send these people away so that they can go to the surrounding countryside and the villages and buy themselves something to eat." So that's their answer. We've got a problem. We don't know what to do. Let's just get rid of the problem. Well, I suppose I would be tempted to do that too if I had 15,000 people turn up on my doorstep and it was tea time. I think probably I'd do the same thing. Say, "Go away, go and get something to eat." Multiple choice, good answer. Wrong answer, fail. Second answer is given by Philip himself in verse 7. Jesus said to Philip, "Where shall we buy bread that these may eat?" And Philip answered him and said, 200 denarii worth of bread is not sufficient for them, that every one of them may have a little." He doesn't actually say they've got 200 denarii, but he nonetheless throws in the figure anyway and thinks, okay, accountant here, 200 denarii, it's not going to be enough. A denarius was about one day's wage, at least if you're on the basic wage, a denarius was one day's wage. And Philip reckons that 200 days' wages, even if they had it, would not have been enough to feed all these. Okay, so there's 365 days in a year, but you don't work for 365 days in a year. You take away 4 weeks' annual leave, and then 42 remaining weekends and 10 public holidays. And if you're in full-time employment, you end up working for 243 days each year. So 200 days is about 5/6 of the year's basic wage, which would come to, in our terms today, using today's basic wage, come to about $25,000. So Philip has these cogs going round in his head. He does this quick calc. He says, "Look, we've got 15,000 people here, if you don't count us 13. And even if we had $25,000, which we don't, that's still only $1.67 each. You couldn't even buy a $2 loose change cheeseburger for that amount, so we're stuck." So Jesus puts Philip to the test. You know, it's multiple choice. And Philip counts the cost. For Philip, the answer is always money. And we don't have enough. Fail. The third answer comes from Philip's friend Andrew. Andrew's got a solution of sorts. He just doesn't quite know how it's going to work, because he looks through the crowd and he sees a boy with his play lunch. He's the only sensible person there. He's the only person that actually brought something to eat. Mind you, it's not much. If we have a look at the next picture, which is coming up, that was it. Two fish, five loaves. Those fish are probably not much bigger than sardines. The loaves are just like little bread rolls. It's not really a lot. But still, in the absence of any other food, Andrew thinks, well, at least it's food. And so he brings the boy to Jesus, and we're going to have to go back to verse 9. And he says, "There is a lad here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 small fish." And then suddenly realising, he looks a bit silly, He sheepishly adds, okay, I know I'm stupid. What are they among so many? Well, at least he tried. But, you know, multiple choice number three, fail. Before we look at multiple choice number four, I want you to have a think about what's going on here. This is the Passover. And the last Passover that we read about in John's Gospel was back there in chapter 2. So what we're reading here in chapter 6 is at least 1 year later. Most people think it was 2 years later. They think there's another Passover in between. So what does that mean? That means that the disciples have now been with Jesus for at least a year, maybe 2 years. And during that time, they have seen Jesus perform numerous signs or miracles. A sign is just a miracle that points to something. A sign is just a miracle that points to something wonderful about Jesus. John has already described in detail three of those important signs. In chapter 2, he told us how Jesus took 500 litres of very ordinary everyday water and changed it into 500 litres of the best quality wine. And in chapter 4, he healed a boy that was nearly dead from a distance of 30 kilometres away. And in chapter 5, he healed a man who had been completely disabled for 38 years, and then he immediately got up and he walked again. And that's not all the signs. We know from chapter 2, verse 23, and from chapter 3 and verse 3, and from this chapter and verse 2, and from chapter 20 and verse 30, that there have been lots of other signs that Jesus has been doing. I mean, the disciples had had miracles coming out of their ears for the last year, maybe 2 years. So really, when Jesus asked them there in verse 5 and said, "Where shall we buy bread that these may eat?" But this he said to test them. It wasn't really such a hard test, was it? I mean, really, was it such a difficult question? Surely after 1 to 2 years of having miracles coming out their ears, that's a no-brainer. But given multiple choice, send them away, let them find their own food. I've done my sums, even if we had lots of money, which we don't, it's not going to work. I found a bit of food, but sorry, that's kind of stupid. So far, no one's come up with the right answer. This is the man who does miracles. And so the man who does miracles performs a sign. He performs a sign where they are. They're among country people whose most basic question is, where is their next meal coming from? And he performs this sign when everyone was hyped up because it was the Passover and they were all remembering how God fed their ancestors every day for 40 years when 2 million of them were wandering through the desert and God fed them with bread from heaven. And Jesus now does his sign. In verse 10, Jesus said, "Make the people sit down." Now there was much grass in the place. So the men sat down in number about 5,000. The males sat down. And Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed them to the disciples, and the disciples to those sitting down, and likewise the fish. And then it adds, as much as they wanted. It's like one of those all you can eat. As much as they wanted. So much, in fact, that it goes on and says, when they were filled, he said to his disciples, "Gather up the fragments that remain so that nothing is lost." And when they gathered up the fragments that remained, they had 12 basketfuls of fragments left over. It's a good reminder, by the way, you don't waste things, even the leftovers. So you see, what you've got here is this impossibly huge problem. You have this overwhelming problem that defies solution. But one small boy gives all that he has, which isn't much, and that isn't much is enough. It is enough in the hands of Jesus. And Jesus took as much as would normally feed one small boy, as I say, the loaves would not have been very big, and he multiplied that to feed 15,013 people. Later it says, in verse 26, it says they were all filled and they were all satisfied. In fact, there was so much that there was even some left over, 12 baskets of fragrance. This is the Passover. Here is Jesus doing what only God could do. What God did do 1,500 years before when the Israelites were trapped in the desert. Here is Jesus who takes the initiative, as God did back then, to provide for these hungry people. Here is Jesus who does this, like God back then, by working an impossible miracle that not only feeds them, but completely satisfies every hungry soul. He is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think. So what did it all mean? Some of this is going to have to wait till later on in John, because a lot of the meaning comes out later on in this chapter, which we're not going to look at tonight. But let's have a look at a couple of things. First of all, whatever it did mean, the people didn't get it. In verse 14, we read, "Then those men, when they had seen the sign that Jesus did, said, 'This is truly the prophet who is to come into the world.'" That sounds good. "This is truly the prophet who is to come into the world." But then it says, they must have missed the point, because therefore, when Jesus perceived that they were about to come and take him by force and make him king, he departed again to the mountain to be left by himself alone. So whatever the people were doing here, it was the wrong response. It looked good. It looked as though it had worked. The people really did believe in Jesus. But one thing we've seen as we've been going through John's Gospel, which we first saw at the end of chapter 2, we read then that many believed in Jesus when they saw the signs that he did, but Jesus did not believe then. Many believed in Jesus when they saw the signs that he did, but Jesus did not believe then, it says, because he knew all men and he knew what was in man. And essentially their response to Jesus here is simply and solely in terms of, "Wow, look what we found. We found a wonder worker who can give us food whenever we want." And that's why they wanted to make him king. And just jumping ahead a bit to verse 26, Jesus says to them later on, he says, "Most assuredly I say to you, you seek me not because you saw the signs, but because you ate the loaves and you were filled." Jesus says, "You saw the sign. The sign points to me. It's all about me. You should be seeking me, but you aren't seeking me. You're just seeking to have a full belly." They saw the sign, but they didn't see where the sign was really pointing. They missed the point. They thought the sign was pointing at a full belly. They thought that was what the sign was all about. But it wasn't. There are those who seek Jesus today for just what it can get there. Their focus is on what they want out of this life. They think that by seeking Jesus, they will get what they want out of this life. They forget the life to come. They just want to get what they can out of this life. And that isn't seeking Jesus. That's just seeking a full belly. But finally, I wonder, because we're going to leave a lot of what this sign's about till we're looking at later on in John chapter 6, but I wonder if we could just learn something from the disciples too. Because you remember how Jesus gave them multiple choice back there in verse 5? He says, "Where shall we buy bread that these may eat?" And this he said to test them. And they failed the test. Let me ask you. Do you face an impossible situation in your life? How do you respond? Maybe like the disciples, the only way to solve this problem is to get rid of it. Only money can solve this problem, and I don't have it. Here are my very limited resources, but what's the use? They're so small. I think the lesson is clear. Yes, we begin with the resources we have, and you're right, you don't have much. In fact, it's pitiful how much you have and how much I have. But you give it to Jesus, you give it all to Jesus, and see what he can do with it. I mean, look at us. Look at the resources that we have as a church even. I mean, today as never before, we have a crowd to feed. This year, the population of the world passed 7 billion. We have a crowd to feed, yes, with food, but more importantly, with the gospel. And the sheer size of that task can overwhelm us. Already, just this year, 50 million people throughout the world have died, many of them without hearing the gospel. And when you think of that, you think, well, it's no wonder that there are many Christians who prefer to keep their heads down and remain quiet in their peaceful little church, whereas Bruce Milne puts it, they can brood about God and be preoccupied with the needs of their own souls. They don't want to be overwhelmed with the idea that there are still many hundreds of millions of people that have never heard the gospel. But Jesus won't let us brood. And he challenges the church. He challenges this church. He says to us, where shall we buy bread that these may eat? And he is testing us. He is testing you, and he is testing me. And some respond to that, and they say, well, you know, the problem is too great. The only way we can solve this problem is to get rid of it. Let's turn our heads and pretend it's not there. There are others who say, well, only money can solve the problem, and we don't have it. And there are still others who say, well, you know, look at our meagre resources. What's the use? And sadly, our response to the Lord's testing is often the same as the disciples. We measure the need, we do our calculations, we look at our finances, we look at our resources, and we can put, it's all too hard. But it's not too hard. Not if we take what we have and hand it over to the one who multiplies the loaves and the fishes. And not if we take all that we have, holding nothing back, and hand it over to Jesus. Warren Wiersbe puts it this way, he says, whenever there is a need, give all that you have to Jesus and let him do the rest. Begin with what you have, but be sure you give it all to him. Jesus is not discouraged by what you have to offer. He will take it. He will use it. He will bless it. He will even give thanks for it long before he does a single thing with it. And then what we have will be multiplied over and over again. The key is to bring it all and to lay it at the feet of Jesus for him to bless and for him to multiply. Amen.